Commissioner Wieskamp?
Here.
Commissioner Johnson?
Here.
Commissioner Von Heder-Leopold?
Here.
Commissioner Miley? Commissioner Haggerty? Commissioner Chan? Commissioner Marchand?
Here.
Commissioner Thorne?
Here.
Commissioner Halbert?
Here.
Commissioner Splendorio?
Here.
Commissioner Pico?
Thank you. On to public comments. Items that are not on the agenda. You wish to address the council or the commission? So, if you move on. Approval of the minutes from July 14th. Any additions or corrections of the motion? Moved by Commissioner Wieskamp, seconded by Commissioner Cohen. Any opposition to the motion? Any abstentions? Passed unanimously. East Bay Mud, Laravel Annexation.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I seem to have done something to this microphone, so let me know if for some reason you can't hear. I wanted to start by saying I did nothing to the microphone. Okay. Anyway, good afternoon. Item number 5 is an application from the property owner, Carol Larabelle, to annex a portion of her property to the East Bay Municipal Utility District for East Bay Mud. Her lot is split by the Alameda Contra Costa County boundary. The portion of her lot that sits in Alameda County is within the city of Oakland and is already within the East Bay Mud boundary. The portion that portion that's in Oakland includes her single-family residence where she's seeking water service from East Bay Mud. A small portion of her property is located on the Contra Costa County side, and that portion of her property is the subject of this annexation proposal. When she approached East Bay Mud to get water service for her house, she learned that East Bay Mud requires that an entire parcel has to be within the district boundary in order to receive service. The district cites a requirement imposed by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation that says that any property that may receive water from the Federal Central Valley Project must be within the district boundary. The district has a contract for supplemental water supplies from the Freeport Regional Water Facility, which is part of the Federal Central the Federal Central Valley Project. The current water source for the residents in Oakland is a well. The proposed annexation of the 2,800 square feet of territory in Contra Costa County is being considered by Alameda LAFCO because Alameda LAFCO is the principal county LAFCO pursuant to Government Code Sections 56.6 and 56.123. The annexation application includes a request for concurrent sphere of influence amendment to include the subject 2,800 square feet. Because the annexation area is small and no development is proposed or possible on the property, the proposed concurrent sphere amendment will have no impact on the existing sphere determinations. Staff recommends that the Commission adopt option 1 in the staff report to approve the annexation and concurrent sphere amendment, determine that the proposal is exempt from CEQA pursuant to the general rule, and waive the protest proceedings. And I can tell you that the property owner is out of country, so she was unable to be here, but there is staff from the district available if there are any questions.
Any questions?
Move off from one.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Wow, that was a whole lot easier than the roll-up. That wasn't it. Okay, number 6. This is the Morris annexation.
So item number 6 is also an annexation application to annex territory to East Bay Mud. This application was submitted by property owners Mr. and Mrs. Morris to annex their 40-acre parcel to East Bay Mud for the purpose of obtaining a valid water service connection to serve the existing structures on that property. The subject property is located just south and east of the town of Moraga in unincorporated Contra Costa County. The current water source for the property is a connection to an East Bay Mud water meter that serves neighboring properties at 15 and 19 Car Ranch Road, whose owners happen to be related to the Morses. The subject annexation area has received water service through this connection since the property was built in 1982. In October 2015, Mr. Morris was notified by East Bay Mud that he had to secure his own water meter pursuant to the district's policy to in order for him to continue receiving the water service. Mr. Morris's property is outside but contiguous to the district's boundary as well as the district's sphere of influence in Cross County. The commission is asked to consider a concurrent sphere amendment to include the annexation area. As discussed in the staff report, approval of the annexation and sphere amendment will not increase water usage on the property because water has been supplied by East Bay Mud for approximately 34 years. No development is proposed or possible on the subject territory, and the extended services are sized to serve only the existing homes on the property. The proposed concurrent sphere amendment will have no impact on the existing sphere determinations. As the LAFCO of the principal county, LAFCO has jurisdiction to consider this proposal, and staff recommends that the commission adopt option one again to approve the annexation and concurrent sphere amendment. Determine that the proposal is exempt from CEQA and waive the protest proceedings. And the property owner is here for this one, as well as staff from East Bay Mud. If there are any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff or for the unit? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Wieskamp.
Second
by Commissioner Wieskamp. We got another one. Okay, second by Commissioner
Wieskamp. I'll see you.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, so you probably say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstentions? That's unanimously. Thank you.
What the
hell?
Things are so easy.
Yeah, okay. Okay, number seven, reconsideration of Pleasant out-of-service agreement retroactive approval from July 14th.
This item, as you recall, the commission at your July 14th meeting partially and conditionally approved the City of Pleasanton's application for retroactive approval of water and sewer service extensions to properties that are outside the city limits in the Happy Valley area and west of Foothills and Sinol areas. And the city had extended those services without the required LAFCO approval. Some of those service extensions were to properties within the city sphere of influence, and some were outside the city sphere of influence. As you may recall, the sphere of influence is determined by LAFCO to be the probable physical boundary and service area of a local agency, in this case, the city. And so if the properties are located outside the sphere of influence, then that's LAFCO's decision that those properties should not be annexed by the city. Subsequent to LAFCO's approval of the Atterbury Service Agreement, Commissioner Sondorio had a conversation with our legal counsel, Andrew Massey, they discussed certain aspects of the condition, which led Commissioner Sondorio to request that the commission reconsider that condition. And I'm going to defer to our legal counsel and Commissioner Sondorio to discuss those issues more fully. But prior to considering the request for reconsideration, the commission should vote to suspend the reconsideration rule from Rosenberg's rules of order to allow the commission to discuss this request.
Okay, so the first thing that we need to do then is to vote to reverse the action. So we need a motion for that.
To suspend the rule.
Suspend
the rule. Yes.
Okay. So
I'll move to suspend the rule.
Please got points for the first discussion.
I'll second it.
Second it. By Commissioner Wieskamp. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimously. So to suspend the rule. Discussion.
So I had two concerns with this condition. The first was that the Kesey-Knox-Hertzberg Act prohibits the commission from imposing conditions that would regulate land use, property development, or subdivision requirements. And the condition pretty squarely regulates property development because it conditions the issuance of any kind of development approval for building permit on the property owner entering into a pre-annexation agreement with the city of Pleasanton. So for that reason, the condition is beyond the authority of the commission. The second issue is that within the one of the three areas in the original application that was denominated west of Foothill and Sunol, a large number of the properties were located outside of the commission's sphere of influence for the city of Pleasanton. And because they were placed outside of the sphere, the commission has determined that those properties should not be annexed into the city. And so it was incongruous for there to be a requirement that these property owners develop their property outside of the sphere, that they would have to enter into an agreement agreeing to annex into the city where the commission has already determined that those properties should not be within the city's boundaries in the future. And so for those reasons, I express concerns with the condition that was adopted at the last meeting.
So the condition that's problematic is that any time anyone developed or asked for a building permit, that the city or the county would require a pre-annexation agreement. That was the problem, if you didn't catch what he was saying. So so just in talking with Andrew and Mona, so we're pretty confident everything in Happy Valley is within the sphere. So what I would suggest or would like to see is that we just remove any condition whatsoever on Happy Valley. It's already within the sphere. To the extent the city and the folks in Happy Valley decide that they want to be part of the city of Pleasanton, it really doesn't matter whether there's a, several properties have pre-annexation agreements, but I didn't see a need to have that condition as to to that area. And then as to the east of Foothill area, some are outside, some are not. And it seems to me that that we can't condition it, as Andrew mentioned, but that what we might want to do is just put words of encouragement to Pleasanton that if they ever decide to want to take a look and change the sphere to include those properties, that they try to get a annexation agreement from them at that time. There's no more of a recommendation than it is.
We're just going to ask, that doesn't restrict the city from asking for
pre-annexation
agreement. Because I think the city would like to have pre-annexation agreements.
Yeah.
How large an area is that we're talking about? Acreage-wise? The area that we're outside of the sphere at the moment,
yeah,
for the city.
Well, it's substantial. If you're talking about the east of Foothill,
yeah,
there's a lot of parcels.
It's a large area, but the number of parcels we're talking about in the application are limited. The largest area where the commission approved the extensions were in the, there were most, and I don't have the number in front of me, so Andrew's looking at it. We're in the west of Foothill area, and most of them
the west area.
Yeah, the west area.
Okay. Did I say east? I'm sorry.
Well, the city of Pleasanton is interested potentially on their own in taking that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of the area, you know, a lot of those parcels, you know, at some point, you know, maybe perhaps, but you know, to have done this properly, it, those parcels that, you know, remember, we're talking about parcels that are currently receiving service.
Right.
And you know, the right way to have done this was to amend the sphere of influence, which we can do, not now, but sometime in the future, include those parcels, and then but we're doing this retroactively because they're already receiving services, so we're trying to fix the problem.
Sure.
Okay.
So, my understanding then, just remove the condition.
And then, I would prefer to see a recommendation as to the west of Foothill properties that the city wasn't encouraged if, when they start, if they ever talk to those folks, try to get a pre-annexation agreement when they put them in the sphere.
Makes sense. So, Andrew, would that, as a recommendation, would that pass as opposed to a requirement?
Yes, it would.
Okay. So, craft that into a motion?
Yep.
Agreed. Okay. We'll call it a motion.
Sure.
Okay.
don't want to use any more oxygen than I have to.
Did you get the motion, Sandy?
Well, it's to remove, motion to remove the condition that was previously at the last meeting.
And replace
it with a recommendation for the areas west of Foothill that the city of Pleasanton recommend that they, get a
on their
work towards encourage them to get.
Okay. Second by Commissioner Byrne. It's your turn. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions?
I'm sorry, did Mayor Thorne?
Mayor Thorne second.
He said, okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, it passed unanimously. Okay, healthcare services in Alameda County. We are attending a series of presentations regarding the provision of municipal services in Alameda County.
Okay, this is item 8, and I'm pleased to introduce Rebecca Gephardt. She's the interim director of the Alameda County Healthcare Services Agency, and she'll provide an overview of the healthcare system in Alameda County with a focus on safety net services. In her role as interim director, Ms. Gephardt oversees the agency's mission to provide fully integrated healthcare services through a comprehensive network of public and private partnerships to ensure optimal health and well-being of all of the county's residents, while respecting the diversity of all of the residents. Today's presentation will provide context for the commission as it considers issues related to the healthcare districts within Alameda County. Those healthcare districts are under LAFCO jurisdiction. Ms. Gephardt has been with the Healthcare Services Agency since April 2012, and prior to that served in the county administrator's office as the budget coordinator, the countywide budget coordinator. Before working for Alameda County, Rebecca served as the founding finance director of First Five Alameda County and in various leadership roles in various East Bay nonprofit organizations. And with that, I'd like to pass it on to Rebecca. Thanks for coming today.
Sure. Thank you, Mona. Good afternoon, everyone. I was asked by Mona to do this after our medical director, Kathleen Flannan, was unable to. And I just have a very kind of broad overview of the healthcare safety net. I'm going to cover a little bit about the County Healthcare Services Agency, healthcare definitions, components of the health system, our county's system in particular, some interesting information about the payer mix in Alameda County and how that affects the safety net, what is the safety net, and what are issues facing the safety net. So this is the vision of Alameda County Healthcare Services Agency. Health equity through the goals of healthy people, healthy places, healthy policies and systems. And I'm not going to read the mission again because Mona just read it to you in my introduction. But we work with a lot of providers and hospitals and clinics to do our work, where we direct service maybe about 20% and we contract out about 80% of the services that we engage in. And the health department has a $700 million budget for approximately one quarter of county government. This is what the Healthcare Services Agency of the county looks like in terms of our departments. We have an overarching department of the director with some overarching functions. The blue is administration and indigent health. That's largely medical care for the underinsured or uninsured. Behavioral health care, which is mental health and substance abuse treatment services. Public health and environmental health. The two organizations on the left are largely involved in the delivery of healthcare services. The two on the right are more involved in preventative services. So they are more concerned about getting in front of issues, and the absence of an event is what they're going for, especially in environmental health. These next two slides, and I'm not going to work through all the details, but it gives you a sense that the county's engaged in both mandated and discretionary services. And for each department, there are a list of state or federally mandated services and discretionary services. The discretionary services are mandated to us by the Board of Supervisors, but not by state or federal law necessarily. So you can see lots of mandated services in the public health department. And each of those mandated or discretionary services is a whole story and presentation of its own. Mona asked me to talk a little bit about the definition of healthcare. What are we talking about? And so I'm showing this slide, which is, it's a framework for health equity. But the story behind this slide is that the definition of healthcare has evolved. It used to be primarily a medical model which focused on disease and the curing of disease. In an individual encounter, it focused on the diagnosis and treatment of disease. In the last 20 years or so, there has been a broadening of the definition of healthcare and focusing more on prevention and not so much the relationship between the physician and the individual and the skill of the physician, but more on what the individual does in their life to prevent illness. And it has a much longer scope than just a visit to the doctor, but a whole kind of birth to death lifestyle and a set of choices. And healthcare is now about supporting behavior changes, like quitting smoking or managing your diabetes to improve your health. So supporting behavior changes, and doctors and physicians and medical assistants are more engaged with supporting behavior changes than just the treatment of disease. So now, looking specifically at the components of the healthcare system, and this is kind of what I'm going to talk about in Alameda County, the basic components are public health, which is, again, that prevention, health education, getting in front of health. Emergency medical services, that's our 911 system. Ambulatory care, both primary and specialty care. Behavioral health services, both inpatient and ambulatory. Dental services, acute care hospitals, long-term care, rehab services, and pharmacy, medical devices, and equipment. So I'm going to talk about some data in Alameda County. And I put this slide in here because this presentation is timed almost exactly at the wrong time. Because at the end of this month, there will be 2015 data available, but it's not available yet from the state or, you know, the places where they post the data. So these two sets of data, some are coming in September and some are coming in October. So that's why I'm showing you 2014 data. So first I want to talk about the payer mix in Alameda County. You can see here these are types of health insurance coverage and where people are getting their coverage. And the majority of the population is getting employer-based coverage in Alameda County in 2014. You can see Medicaid, which is in our state called Medi-Cal, is 20% of the population. However, some people have both Medicare and Medi-Cal, and you can see that's about 4%. The uninsured, it looks like in this slide, about just under 10%. Then there's private purchase and Medicare only. This next slide, I want to show the... Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
How does those percentages compare to other counties in the Bay Area and to other counties in the state?
I don't know. I could get that information and send it to you.
No.
I mean, if you're having a longer-term discussion about the issue of hospitals, I'm happy to send that information. Now, this is a picture of what happened before and after healthcare reform, which is it's been a big change in our system and one that many aspects of the system, including hospitals, including the 911 system, were still responding to the changes in the payer mix. So the biggest change is Medicaid. So Medicaid was just about 12%, and it increased to 20% with the Affordable Care Act. That was largely the 19 to 65-year-olds that were not covered by Medi-Cal prior to health care reform, and they became covered on January 1, 2014. Another kind of anomaly with this is there's other public, which is sitting at the top there. We believe that other public is actually uninsured. This data came from as you see, it says statistically unstable. The county covers people with health care services for the indigent, people who are largely undocumented. Alameda County's Board of Supervisors has allocated general fund monies to cover the undocs who are registered in our program. That program is called Health Pack, and some people consider it coverage. It's not actually insurance coverage. It's the county's medically indigent program, but during the data collection, people called it other public, like it was a coverage, but it's actually, those folks are likely down in the uninsured category. So more uninsured than what that looks like, the light green. So our healthcare system in Alameda County major care providers, these are names that are known to most of you, hospitals and very large medical groups. And this is actually the slide I want to take a little bit of time with, because this is the slide that shows, it's basically a picture of the safety net. And I brought full-size ones. Can we hand these out?
Sure.
And I brought enough for the public.
Oh, okay.
So the color coding, this is, I think, a really great visual representation of the safety net. Orange, the orange bar, the key code is at the bottom. The orange bar is Medi-Cal, health insurance for low-income folks, low-income residents of Alameda County who are legal. The county indigent program is the bright blue. So you can see the larger the Medi-Cal, the larger proportion of the safety net population that hospital takes. So San Leandro, which is part of the Alameda Health System, Highland, which is part of the Alameda Health System, and St. Rose and Children's are some of the larger safety net hospitals. And then you get to the bottom, the Kaisers, much smaller percentage of Medi-Cal and the uninsured. This data will be available in the next month or so for 2015, and I'm happy to send an updated slide to Mona for your information and discussion. So these are the safety net services that our county indigent program provides for the undocumented population, and they are basically, these services mirror Medi-Cal. So when we talk about the safety net, we talk about Medi-Cal and the uninsured. We include Medi-Cal in the safety net and the providers that serve Medi-Cal in the safety net because Medi-Cal is largely not well compensated. So hospitals who get a large proportion of Medi-Cal have to figure out ways to cover that shortfall. There's generally a shortfall in Medi-Cal payment for services, so they've got to pay that by employer paid or some other kind of coverage. Or they have to draw down supplemental payments, or they have the foundation. But it's kind of the ongoing struggle and challenge for hospitals to figure out how to get their Medi-Cal and uninsured costs paid. I'll also say that although we contract with hospitals and clinics to pay for the uninsured, the amounts that we allocate for those don't cover the full cost of the uninsured health services. So this is a little bit of, this is kind of a three-slide sequence of the evolution of the safety net that the county contracts with and works with. So around 1980, we had the Healthcare Services Agency is in the big blue box, and the county contracts for services with the clinic consortium, which would be Agent and the clinic in West Oakland, Tri-City, Tiburcio Vasquez, the Over 60 Clinic in Berkeley, Valley Community, and Native Americans. This was in 1980. At the time, Highland, Fairmount, and the freestanding clinics of what's now Alameda Health System were part of the county. In 1996, Alameda County Medical Center separated from the county and became its own health authority. At that point, the county contracted with the Hospital for Indigent Health Services, as opposed to it being a county department, and continued to contract with all the clinics. Around this time, the Public Managed Care Plan for Medi-Cal, which is Alameda Alliance for Health, was created to be the coverage for basically fee-for-service Medi-Cal, and what was in managed care at that time were moms and kids. It wasn't a lot of people in managed care. Most everybody else was in fee-for-service. Today, Alameda County Medical Center has morphed into Alameda Health System and now also has San Leandro and Alameda hospitals. The alliance is bigger, and as you all may know, many of the Medi-Cal beneficiaries are moving in to managed care, which is a kind of, it's a capitated rate structure, it's a different kind of payment structure, and fee-for-service Medi-Cal is becoming less and less. Managed care is where most of the Medi-Cal beneficiaries are going. So we have a very strong relationship with Alameda Alliance for Health, with the hospital, and the health department still engages in all these contracted relationships. One of our perspectives that we talk about is that none of these big institutions operates in a vacuum anymore or can really function as a completely independent institution. We are a health system, and we all actually are working together as a health system. Cooperation between the plan, the hospital, the public hospital, and the county has never been better than what it is right now. I'm not saying there are not issues. There are always issues in collaborations and partnerships, but this is a big system, and we work together, and we're working together more and more. I put this in because I just got it this week. This is an updated school health slide. It's just another picture of how the county health system works. In the past 15 to 20 years, the Board of Supervisors has authorized us to engage in contracts and develop relationships with school districts so that we have health centers, physical health centers, in 28 schools, and we have people and clinicians in hundreds of schools, in every school district. And this is just the school health centers, but we have school-based behavioral health clinicians in over 200 schools all across the county, in every school district. So not only are our services, the healthcare systems, services clinic-based or hospital-based, increasingly we're looking at portals to reach people where they are, like school-based. And even recently, we set up a health clinic in a fire station. So this is the numbers of Medi-Cal and the uninsured as of now. So Medi-Cal in managed care, as of August 1st, had 316,000 members. Medi-Cal fee-for-service, the estimate, so some of these, so the bottom line numbers here are going to be approximate, is about 79,000. And we have undocumented children eligible for Medi-Cal 8,000. So the Medi-Cal total is about 400,000. Now the uninsured, largely undocumented population, 65,000. And then we have eligible for Medi-Cal or eligible for subsidies through Covered California, but not enrolled. So they show up as uninsured when they go to the emergency room or when they go to a clinic. Under 5,000 each, but it's significant. They're not enrolled in coverage, so they're uninsured. Then non-subsidy eligible citizens and lawfully present immigrants. There's a 5-year period before actually somebody can be considered a legal resident. So they can be here sort of legally, but they're not actually a legal resident and therefore eligible for Medi-Cal for 5 years. So there's 17,000. So the total uninsured is 84. It's not going to add up perfectly because of the less than 5,000s. But the approximate total, over 480,000 uninsured. That is, when you consider that our county has a population of 1.6 million or thereabouts, more than 25% are either uninsured or low income. Interesting picture. The uninsured data sources are listed there, and the insurance data sources actually came from the managed care plan. So Mona asked a question about what is the demand for healthcare services, and that's actually one of the hardest questions for us to answer. There's not a good way to assess demand. We look at population trends, we look at increases in ER visits, we look at how different kinds of specialties are being utilized, how that utilization changes over time, but it's hard to say. And, you know, we also look at people leaving the Bay Area. It is hard to say, but when we look at it, and actually we had a slide, but it was so wishy-washy, it was even worse than this. So we took it out, and I just said, if our medical director can't give me clear information about how the hospitals and clinics are assessing demand, then I'm not going to try to give you something. But we do, we are looking to the future with respect to anticipated demand, and these are some of the things that we are doing right now. We understand that from futurists and from the data the growth in the number of seniors and older adults is going to be significant over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And right now we are actively engaged in the health department and with our partner, the Social Services Agency, to figure out how we can prepare for that. And they say the best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago. The second best time is right now. So in preparation for 10 years or 20 years from now, we're looking at identifying what those senior services should be and trying to figure out how to get them in place, funded now. So planning for senior services. We're also working a lot focusing on prevention. In the same way that the definition of healthcare has changed, we ourselves as a health department are focusing a lot on how we can support our residents, our citizens, to manage their own behavior, to be aware of what healthy behaviors are, and to engage in those behaviors and support them to do that. We're also looking a lot at the impact on housing. You may have seen our public health officer, Dr. Davis, was in the paper last week talking about the health impacts of constricted, dense housing or lack of housing. Public health also works a lot on nutrition and exercise. And then we're working a lot with, increasingly with all members of our health system, on what to do about the high utilizing population. By high utilizing, we mean people who utilize health service multiple times. They're calling 911 20 times in a month. They're going to the ER routinely, sometimes for health reasons, sometimes not for health reasons. And the high cost, high utilizers are a huge proportion of the health system's budget. So the state and the feds are very interested in trying to figure out how to reduce the cost of the high utilizing population, particularly the Medi-Cal beneficiaries, because you can see what a big proportion they are. So there are a number of new initiatives that are focused on getting people to their provider and getting them regularly connected to their provider and held by their provider in a way that where they don't fall through the cracks. This is the Health Homes Project, which takes place in the managed care plan, in the public and private managed care plans. The health department is involved in an initiative called Whole Person Care, and this is a federally funded program associated with the Medicaid program. It's a five-year grant that we just applied for. We think we're going to get $30 million a year. It's focused on the high-utilizing population, and in Alameda County, we define that as folks who have a serious mental illness or drug and alcohol problem who are utilizers of multiple systems. So they're in the ER, they're in the hospital, they're in the clinic, they use 911, and they have a mental health issue or a substance abuse problem. So you're going to know that a lot of those folks are going to be homeless people who are utilizing the system over and over. So the feds, for the first time, I believe, are willing to allow us to use their federal money for housing. So this $30 million a year grant for 5 years pays for an IT platform for our system to be able to communicate with itself about high utilizers, training and human resources around care management and care transitions for this population, and housing supports for this population. So Medi-Cal, Medicaid program doesn't have to pay for housing. It is through this program. So we are engaging with all the hospitals and clinics who serve the Medi-Cal population with respect to this work. And again, we view us all as a system. If we're going to bend the curve on managing high utilizers, we have to figure out how to work together. These are what we see as some of the healthcare challenges. The aging population, which I talked about, the cost of health insurance, which I'm sure you're all aware of. As I mentioned before, low Medi-Cal reimbursements. Pent-up demand for healthcare services, and typically happens when healthcare becomes more universal, more people start using the emergency room, and we saw an uptick in the emergency room utilization in the last 3 years since healthcare reform. Hospital closures, we know doctors in Contra Costa County, we know we're talking internally to our partners about what's going to happen with Alta Bates. A challenge we have been working on for the past 5 years is integrating behavioral health into primary care. Your mental health system and your primary care system were siloed for many, many years, and in the last 5 years we're integrating them, and it's challenging, but it's better for the client to have all of their care in one place. Transition to electronic health records, still underway and a big challenge for all of our providers, and the availability of and access to primary care. And we work and contract with all the primary care clinics, the Community Health Center Network, and we monitor their wait times. And their wait times for a primary care appointment are typically still 2 weeks to 2 months. And that is an access issue. When you make all these folks newly eligible and you get them into health care, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be able to see a doctor on a timely basis. So what we say internally is eligibility doesn't mean enrollment, because you've got to get somebody enrolled, and enrollment doesn't necessarily mean access. Because if you don't have enough physicians, if you don't have enough clinics, then you're going to have an access problem, and that's where we find ourselves. That is my presentation, and I'm happy to take questions. And I'm also happy, as I said before, to provide any additional information that I didn't bring today.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Going back to that, just looking at, you know, your slides on the payer mix and the major systems, is the VA, and I see on the provider that the VA outpatient is on the list, but in terms of the payer mix, is this that population just so small that it doesn't register?
You know, I don't know.
Or is it in one of these other categories?
It would be, I think the payer mix slide is inpatient, so it's not showing up there because this VA is outpatient. So it just didn't capture that data because it was a different kind of service.
Valley Care is also Stanford Valley Care now, if you wanted to change that.
I should have, yeah, you're right.
So I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your answer. So where would the VA veterans be?
I think it's an outpatient clinic, and the payer mix data is for inpatient hospitals.
Oh, I see.
So different modalities.
Right. So if it's inpatient, they're going to Palo Alto or somewhere else?
They're going someplace else.
Yeah, not in the county. There are any VA inpatient in Alameda County.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Right. Unless they show up.
Yeah,
unless
not a VA hospital.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You mentioned Alpha Bates as possibly closing. Are there other hospitals that are in that same category? I'm thinking along the lines of the seismic retrofits that it's going to be very expensive to do.
The only one that I know, but it's not being closed, but St. Rose is out of seismic compliance in 2030. I don't see any activity towards getting them into seismic compliance.
How about San Leandro Hospital? Is it?
I don't know. San Leandro Hospital seismic?
Yes, San Leandro Hospital is seismically in compliance, but we do have our rehab center up the hill in Fairmont that is out of compliance with seismic mandates, and we're actually trying to figure out how to move that rehab money into the San
Diego
Hospital.
Okay.
Thank you. That's Terry Lightfoot, who's the Director of Government Relations at Alameda Health System.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
I would like to see the update when you get a chance. That would be good.
Uh-huh.
All the issues going on now.
And I'll just say, I'll wait to get the updated data from you for that note. But typically we'll post the presentations on our last website, so that's okay. So it'll be available for anybody who's interested to see it. So thanks so much for coming.
Could I ask about a term?
Sure.
Ambulatory wellness centers. What is an ambulatory wellness center? Anybody who wants to answer? I'm open.
Walk in for care.
Very, you can walk in and what happens.
Alameda Health System has ambulatory wellness.
I see that. I'd just like to know what it is.
So the difference between acute care and ambulatory care. Acute care is inpatient hospital care. Ambulatory care is outpatient primary care services. Wellness centers like we have in Hayward, Fremont, and other places. So basically speaking, your ambulatory care provides your outpatient and primary care, specialty care services.
About how many people would you say are being handled in those four systems?
In the clinics?
Yeah.
I'd have to get that number for you.
Okay. I just wondered how much of our service is being handled by those, because obviously, I assume you're quite busy.
We would like to be busier in ambulatory care, actually.
Okay.
We're trying to shift from inpatient care into ambulatory care, because that's where you provide for prevention services.
Okay, so that's so really...
Yes, we are busy, but we want to be more so.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions, comments? Great, thank you very much. On to Eden Township, speaks to talk about health care. Eden Township Health Care District Special Study Update.
At your July 14th LASCO meeting, the commission approved the city of Cambridge's request for LASCO to conduct a special study of the Union Township Healthcare District. And also at that time, the commission authorized the executive officer to enter into a contract with First Associates to conduct a study. And the staff report provided a summary of what's happened so far. And as I mentioned in the staff report, the contract with Burson and Associates has been executed, and the consultant has started the study, and there have been meetings that have taken place already. We'll continue on that path as the project moves along. I wanted to ask the commission's clarification on one item, which is that at the July meeting, there was some discussion among the commissioners about whether to ask the interested parties, which would be the cities of Hayward and San Leandro, Alameda County, and the district, to help pay for the study. But there wasn't a clear direction to staff about that, so I just wanted to check in with the commission about whether you could provide clarification about whether you would like me to send a written request to those entities or not. And also, as mentioned in the staff report, Assembly Bill 2471, which was Assembly Member Quirk's legislation that would have required Alameda LASCO to dissolve the Eastern Township Healthcare District if certain criteria were met, died on the Senate floor on August 31st. And so now that the outcome of that legislation is known, I wanted to give the Commission an opportunity to discuss possible dates and times to hold the public meetings that the Commission asked to be held at your last meeting. And those meetings were requested to obtain feedback from the district's constituents. And also included in that staff report was a draft notice for those meetings, because we had kind of found dates that we moved along, but decided to hold off on that in the end. And I would accept any suggestions for how to improve the noticing for those meetings, and then I would welcome discussion as well about when and where and what point in this project the commission would like to hold those meetings. And then I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission might have.
Okay. Questions regarding this comment? One of the reasons that we originally had planned on having the hearings and then the urgency went away is because originally we were under the impression that it's going to be held in committee, and then I went out of committee onto the Senate floor, and then there were some confusions. Yeah, so some of the urgency to have those hearings went away. So what's the consensus from the commission to when should we have those hearings? Do you still wish to have them? Do you still value in that to get feedback from constituents for the Union Township Healthcare?
I certainly think it would need feedback from the community. I'm just concerned with our outreach so that we really get through to the community and find out what their thinking is. And I think they're going to want to know what happens if Eden Township Healthcare goes away. Let's be very honest here. This is about the resources that are available to support healthcare. And I think constituents are going to want a full picture. Now, are we going to be ready to do that soon? That's my question. It seems like a very tight time frame to study. Maybe that's just to me.
And that's one of the questions. One of my points is when you ask a question, make sure you're ready for the answer. And if they come back and ask us, well, what's this going to look like? If the district goes away,
yeah.
Do we have an answer for that? Commissioner Miley?
Yes. With the study, will there be any meetings, public meetings, as a result of the study that's being taken?
Yes, Commissioner, there will be. One of the public meetings, you know, the planned public meeting that would happen would be when the commission considers the consultant will make a presentation to the commission about the study and what his findings are and what his recommendations are, and there'd be a public meeting held for the commission to consider those. And so perhaps in conjunction with that, there could be meetings held in the community.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering if the study leading up to the findings and the recommendations from the study if there would be any meetings prior to that. And that's not part of the scope of work at the moment.
There are public meetings that are in the scope of work, but those were related to the office meetings that have been planned. So there are public meetings within the scope of the work.
These aren't exclusive directions, but one thought might be to have the consultant conduct either some focus groups or some community meetings to get a sense of what the public is thinking and saying. That could help inform us. We could also schedule to do something in addition to that ourselves. And I just want folks to know as well, the Cash Trial and the Municipal Advisory Council, they're watching this very carefully, and there will be a report on this at the Castro Valley MAC meeting in October. So I know Castro Valley is tracking this. So I'm just saying this, if we can put together an entire kind of a public engagement plan, if we so chose, that would include maybe consultants, the Castro Valley MAC, and us as well.
Could we use that map to get the information out into the community to encourage people to come to the hearing and to give the platform an opportunity to
hear what they have to say?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it should be done in all the areas.
It should certainly
be done. Yeah. But the predominant area of the district is what? The healthcare district?
So the healthcare district covers most of the city of Hayward, all of the city of San Leandro, Castro Valley, Ashley, Cherry Lands, and San Loretto.
Because maybe the city of Hayward and the city of San Leandro could also help facilitate some type of engagement plan. Because, you know, I can handle I'm not bragging, but I can handle my sure, I can handle air. We can get the word out. And maybe we can call sometimes, you know, see Kelly there. And I know folks in San Leandro. Maybe we could ask them to help us with some type of engagement in Hayward, some type of engagement in San Leandro.
Yeah.
And then we have the unincorporated area. And then maybe we can do an overall thing. I don't know. I'm just throwing some stuff at you.
That's a good idea.
I think it might be interesting to talk about polling. I really wonder how many people are aware of the system and what difference it can make in your life. I don't know. So I would just say that it's not within the scope of work of the consultants to hold focus groups or to do polling. So that would be something that the commission should consider whether they want to do that and how and when they want to do that. It is within the scope of work of the consultant to attend public meetings, and I could talk to him about some kind of focus group type effort to get community members' input, but he could definitely do kind of a workshop presentation prior to the commission considering the study at a public meeting. And I also just wanted to add before I stop that the city managers of Hayward and San Leandro have already offered, as did their mayors when they were here in July, to help get the word out and hold meetings at their city council chambers.
Yes, so I would suggest that we put together some type of public engagement plan that would include the cities of Hayward and San Leandro and the incorporated community. We try to see if we want to have the consultants who are doing the study to have any responsibility for any type of engagement as part of our plan as well. And then that LAFCO, we're going to have at least a hearing. We might have two on this. This is a very controversial matter, and I really want to get a good indication whether or not, you know, how the public feels about this. Now, I know the district is saying ultimately we might have to go to a vote, and it would be kind of informative to know where we stand as a result of having received a lot of public input on this and a thorough effort at public engagement before we make a decision on what we're going to do with the district. Yeah,
I totally agree with that, but I really want to go back and say the public's going to have to know what happens if it goes west.
I think we need to think about that. That is what we're doing. Somebody's going to have to come up with that picture.
That would be the first question that they ask us at the hearing is what happens if they go away?
Yeah. And I think we're going to have some answers for the public. Because you've got hospitals that obviously, one we said was seismically in trouble. And I think people are more and more concerned with health care and how it's happening or not happening. And I'm sure it's throughout your area.
Yeah, I think I agree, and I think that's one of the questions.
Yeah.
And I know labor's going to have some, going to want to weigh in on this as well.
I think your comment about that polling is very interesting because just what is the level of consciousness throughout the community?
Right.
Yeah, I remember nobody ever heard of Zone 7. They didn't know what they were. But that's,
well, nobody's ever heard of Blasco either.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with that.
You like that. Okay.
But the community's point is, what is the depth of understanding out of the community about,
sure,
do they even know this exists? And people might not even know, you know what it is, and if there is an impact, they may not see if there's an impact, has any impact on them.
They may not have thought of choices, you know. They may not even have a clue that there might be a choice. And I think that's what we're kind of looking at here. What happens if it goes away? Does this change your choices? And what would they be? And I think that's very important to help them.
What do you think the poll would cost to have that scope?
I have no idea. So I have no idea to look into that. And I know there's firms that you hire to do that, and I would imagine some of you have experience with those firms. So I'd be happy to look into it and bring information back. And I would also add that it is within the scope of the contract to look at what would happen to the district in the event of dissolution. So I'm expecting that we're going to get some information from that board with which to be able to answer that question.
So it's going to be interesting how you time this, because we're going to need that information to have when people ask us what happens when it goes away. But if we have the hearings before we have information, we don't have to answer.
Right.
So, yeah,
you have any interest there? Oh, no, I know. But in terms of the poll, you know, we've had EMCU poll for us, West Patrick's really effective, for BB, for our House of Bond, President Chan had a poll. We did the pending polls for Measure A, the healthcare measure. So, generally, you know, the poll, we can probably get away with a limited poll if there's a limited universe of, let's say, 600 or so, about 30,000.
Yeah. They may not know what it is.
Do you have a sense of how long it takes to do a limited area poll?
No, a couple of nights.
A couple of nights?
You have to organize it correctly and you have to write it up. But it's going to be fairly limited.
Ask the right question.
So it's pretty quick. Okay,
pretty quick. But I don't think we should schedule any meetings until we've got more information.
I disagree. I do not think that's the point of this.
What do you want to see?
To help our consultant prepare his or her study. I'm not saying we're going to make any decisions. We're not going to make any decisions. We need to have, we propose having two hearings in the area so the public can come. A, number one, to gauge their level of involvement, commitment, what they believe the district is doing or not doing. And the consultant to hear that. I mean, we were supposed to have them in August.
Well,
I'm disappointed. I understand that. I want to have them as soon as possible. I think we should have them. We're going to have anything valuable out of the study. How is the consultant going to know what the community feels about? I mean, other than to have start with a public hearing. Now, I'm not sure we need two. Maybe one, and if we can video. I mean, if we have it in Hayward, and maybe have it at the video in Cache Valley, or the opposite, so we get broad. I know maybe we can't do it under the government code, but
point is to get the yeah, right. We can't. I know that. If Matt Lauer can take Twitter questions, I don't know why we can't. But my point is, you know, it's for us, the educators, but also for the community, but also the consultants to be educated. So I think we need to take that first step. Let's see what kind of information we get from that. We need to go to a poll. We know to do a poll. But we need to hear from the community. And I don't know of another way to do that other than to plant our feet in the community and invite them and hear.
You've got to get the word up first, so we've got to get that all planned.
I'm figuring that, you know, with Castro Valley, they've got it covered. And the city of Hayward is going to have their own list, and you know, and San Leandro, you know, and put it in the newspaper. I don't know what kind of. Let me ask you, in terms of reaching your constituents, is it email, Twitter, everything?
It's all that and more.
Yeah. So out of Hayward, San Leandro, is it the same thing? If you got a lot of net modes of communication, do them all. Okay. Do them all. And,
October then? For the meeting?
Well, yeah, I guess. At this point, yes. October. At this point, yes.
At this point, October.
Yeah.
I would just add that the consultants gathering information by talking to the agency people. So talk to the district, talk to San Leandro and Hayward, and he's gathering information in that way so that he can have a foundation of information which maybe would be useful to present at a meeting to the public rather than just inviting people to tell us what they think about the district without any context.
I understand that there should be some structure to it. And that would be up to you and the consultant to develop some structure. I mean, we've talked about some of the questions the answer is, well, what happens if it's not there? But I want to hear, so what does the community feel that the district is providing within it? Well, I know we can hear from the district, but I want to hear from them too. What do they feel? I mean, is there, or what's missing? What's not there? And I think we should hear that.
Okay. Well, yes, Commissioner
Hayden. I'm a little nervous about this only due to the fact that I think before we go too far, I'd like to see a budget. I'm hearing 30,000 bands around, and I'm hearing big plans here, and I don't know whose money we're spending yet. So I think I'd like to see a budget, whose money we're spending, before I really comment on how big I want this to be. And, I heard Matt Lauer's name, and I don't know if we're bringing him to moderate. That's the next thing we're going to be commissioning the chiefs. So.
We already approved the $30,000 for the consultant and to do a couple public hearings. We've already done that.
And that's out of Lapos.
That's what we already did.
So Lapos came from that. Yeah. Which is, as you all know, funded by the member agencies of the county, all the cities, and all the independent specialists.
Right, but then I heard maybe a poll that is $30,000 alone. So,
yes.
I know. I get it. But, okay, so you're going to stay within that budget.
The existing $30,000?
Yeah.
I don't know that we would get polling out of that if it cost an additional $30,000.
I'm hearing a lot of people talking to me, and I guess I'll just say what I'm saying.
Sure.
I fully expect us to stay within the budget. And just, I think that other people, Lapco's budget is a lot of people that don't have skin in this game, to be very honest with you. And in a way that kind of don't feel it's fair, to be very honest with you. And I think that. I think that if this budget starts going over 30, we need to be looking at the people that are directly affected and maybe come up with the rest of the money.
Well, that was one of the important things.
You know, you're disagreeing with me, that's my point.
Well, that's what comes in this process in the very beginning was whether or not to engage with people, the other organizations that have asked us the expedited study to perhaps contribute to the effort since we went through this effort not that long ago. and see if perhaps they can really contribute to what really get to a to the conclusion.
I think you asked us for to take a official position and write a letter if we thought it was appropriate for them to share the cost. Mm-hmm.
So my recollection of what we approved for $30,000 was a special study. And the point of the special study was to provide a report as to what, if anything, should happen to Eaton Hospital District.
Well, we're going beyond that scope now, so.
And that's my point. I
remember to write checks and all this other stuff.
And I agree with you, Scott. I don't want to do that either. I want to stick to what we agreed to do. And if something else comes out and something we have to consider funding, fine, but not today. Today, let's complete the study. And I think part of the study was having public hearings. We included that. Let's have one. I mean, if something changes during these hearings, well, let's consider it.
Have you envisioned part of that special study being to polling and all that?
Not me.
I don't think you have
to. That needs to be on the table. That needs to be discussed.
That's
additional ones decide to do it. I would also like to offer that your legal counsel has informed me that this was on the agenda as an info item, so we can't take action. The commission can't take action today to modify the contract if that is in fact something you'd like to do.
Can we set? Can we use this to set dates for?
You can provide direction to
for the dates. Later. Hearings, because we're talking about October, that's next month, so perhaps we can pick a couple of dates for that. I do have a card. Is there another one?
Sorry, you might have another one.
Just the one? It's okay.
What's that gentleman? I would like to hear from the ones who are affected by it. Do you have other cards? What do we want, one or two maybe? And then we use that they represent quite a few people.
I've got a second card. Okay, let's hear what the constituents have to say. I've got two cards right now, Pauline Cutter and Tom Lawrenson. Ms. Cutter, the mayor of San Leandro.
Hello, nice to be here again. One of the first things to get out of the way is, of the five agencies involved in this, San Leandro is more than willing to pay their fair share if you split it. Just to get that out of the way. And I want to say on your handout number 9, I believe it is, there's a, you're talking about awareness in the community. And it's actually in a resolution that San Leandro passed Monday night unanimously from our council. It talks about by the district's own admission, 80% of the population who lives within a boundary is unaware of what they do. So that was taken from their strategic plan. I would love to see that we have these meetings. I know I kind of opened the kettle of worms a year and a half ago or something, and my goal, whether it happened or not, but my primary goal was to see the money after obligations were met from the health care district to be divided between the two health care hospitals, and that would be St. Rose and San Leandro Hospital. And I felt that that was an equitable thing to do since Castro Valley has Eaton now, and I'm just trying to make sure that our safety net hospitals are covered. So I would really like to have a meeting in San Leandro. If we're going to do this public outreach, we're prepared to host it and be responsible for it, giving out the all of the publications and publicity, and I think that would be really helpful to if you do want to hear from the public. I just in a lot of my travels this last year and a half, I can say that there's not very many people aware of really what it is they do, and it will be an interesting conversation. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Mayor Cutter. And that's one of the interesting things, 80% of the people don't know about the district. If they have a public hearing, maybe nobody shows up.
Yes.
So we have to make sure that there is sufficient engagement to get even 20% that have heard of this. So that's going to be up to the folks in get the interested parties to make sure that that word does get out so that we have, yes?
But then when they're reported, will be very helpful, would you be feeling willing to get the word out?
Okay, sure. Because I think, to make Krishna Miley's point, the public engagement is going to be very important on this.
I think we ought to leave it up to the MAC and Sammy Andrew and Hayward to hold their own public hearings, invite the public. It comes from their city. Tell them what it's about. It's to discuss the future of it, to tell you what it does, to tell you it even exists, and then what it does, and get input on its future. I think they should do that. I don't know that we necessarily have to do it because they're trying to provide information to the consultant that substantiates their position that it needs to go away.
Governor Carter, Tom Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you very much. I was thinking about, oops, getting an apartment. We come here so often, so I don't know what you're doing. As everybody here. What I'm going to do basically is echo what was just said in the presentation earlier from Alameda County in terms of being futuristic. And that's an important process to understand is rather than going back to the future, the whole paradigm on health and healthcare in the term semantics came up. The research that exists, particularly through Kaiser for 50 years, is that healthcare is 70% synonymous with medical care. And having served as a senior federal health official here in the Western States, I'm quite familiar with how important semantics are and how you frame a subject. And like you mentioned, the awareness of LAFCO is minimal. So if you invite the public to come in LAFCO, or anyone will show up. The Eden District, as other districts, very little awareness of us because we don't seek awareness. So the only people that would really show up, for the most part, particularly if it's turned over to political people, will get the people there for political reasons rather than public health reasons. So I express that as a caution to you. LAFCO, I came on the board just as you were finishing your process. And I thought you did a very comprehensive, thorough process. Now you're having to go back and revisit your own process you went through, primarily motivated by political people, because they didn't participate in your process. Now you're spending $30,000 or more for a process they chose not to participate in. And at some point, the cycle should end, and I urge you to, you know, make sure that you did a good job before. And to me, that should be standing. There's other motivations, I think, that appear that did not choose to participate in the process because they didn't apparently have any issues to participate. But the futuristic process is really the question that I quote Jack Kennedy when he said, under the complex situation after Sputnik and the concern we had with the Soviets, and that was, I want to put one man on the moon at the end of this decade, turn all the smart people to figure it out. Complex, difficult situation, smart people did that. So in 1969, we put a person on the moon. The whole paradigm on health has evolved, and I've spent a lot of time working on this nationally, and statewide, and locally. The question of the moral paradigm has become, how do you improve health outcomes? Not how do you get more medical care for more sick people? And literacy and knowledge and the whole aspect of health has gone through a whole revolution. And I'm concerned that if we go back to the future, going back to the medical-centered approach to health, rather than the literacy, public awareness, knowledge of how to improve health outcomes. So the Eden District, during the year and a half, we have made a total change. We're moving in that direction. We want to go even more so in that direction during the years ahead as part of our strategic plan. So I just want to thank you, and I want to thank you for doing the good job you did before, and please keep control of the process. Don't let it get politicized and get out of control for other purposes. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Melissa. Got it? Okay, so we talked about having public hearings. We just had a suggestion to have the interested agencies hold those public hearings and then report back to LAFCO. What's the what's the consensus of the commission on that?
I think each of them would have to involve Eden to make a presentation.
Well, obviously Eden, and we could be invited. The consultant should be there. et cetera, et cetera. I don't know that they need to hold public hearings per se. Maybe they're just town hall meetings.
Yeah.
What do you think about, we originally talked about having the LAFCO commission at these hearings, and we actually did set up two meetings for that purpose. Your suggestion is to have the interest of the agencies put those on, and have our consultant report back. What's the, what's the commission on that?
I mean, I want attendance. I will learn one way or another. So if they're, I'd rather control the process personally, but it doesn't
mean they don't gotta contact the people.
But they're gonna let user contacts anyway. So even if we hold it. So but in any event, I mean, I'm happy to attend meetings in Hayward, San Leandro, and Castro Valley, and if we think we might need public, I mean, we will have to have a public hearing, we're gonna have a report, so we will. But fine, I just hope they happen sooner rather than later.
Well, it's a separate item, and we'll hear after this the grand jury report and our draft response. Mm-hmm. Just to keep in the context that we have been called out a little bit, right, by the grand jury report. And so, however we proceed, I think we have to be respectful of the fact that we're going to be responding with this document. I think we have to own the process. If we delegate some of it to have public meetings held by other agencies, fine. We agree to it. We want to have a bigger part in that, fine. But I think to echo what was said, we have to participate. We have to be at the table, and we have to include it, I believe, in our response to the grand jury, or otherwise respect what we've told here. Participate through the thorough. So I'm okay either way, but we just have to make sure we're at the table every step of the way.
Appreciate it.
I might be missing some, but you know, I tell my friends I'm going to LAFCO, they think I'm going to a comedy club. So I don't know why we wouldn't use this as maybe an opportunity to get people to kind of understand what LAFCO is. So why wouldn't we hold these hearings? And why wouldn't we hold them up there? Why wouldn't we hold them in that jurisdiction? I mean, why wouldn't we use this as an opportunity to heighten the understanding of LAFCO and exactly what LAFCO does? So when I tell my friends that I'm going to a LAFCO meeting, they don't think I'm going to have a couple beers.
Since you duck it up, right?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree with Scott at all. The problem is going to be, I think, or the issue that's going to happen is you're going to send out a notice to the general public, and the same problem is going to happen. They're going to look at it and go, who the heck is LAFCO? If we want, maybe we ought to do it jointly. So that they understand that their community, the MAC, and the city of Hayward and San Leandro are supporting this and offering this to their people.
Sure, well, that's what we're going to do. Yes, it's time for the audience of LAFCO working with the city of San Leandro, the city of Hayward,
that's fine.
Castro Valley, that there is this joint meeting hearing being put on by LAFCO.
We have to do it there.
Right. Yeah. But we're the audience kind of LAFCO, so we've got that.
I mean, it could have a Hayward's logo, it could have...
Yeah.
Oh,
the
assembly member clerk's logo. We could have our logo. I'm trying to catch everybody in the audience. I don't want to offend anybody.
Any?
Yeah.
Okay.
Miley's logo.
I would suggest the same thing. I think the joint meetings make sense. I believe now that this whole group is going to be able to make all those meetings.
Yes.
All of us at LAFCO. But I would think we could get a decent representation depending on the dates that are chosen. Okay. And so I think if we all commit to do that, I think it's fine.
Okay. So do you want to try to set some dates today, or do you want to work with Ms. Blasos? Do you want to coordinate with Jordan and San Diego and Castro Valley and the MAC that we could coordinate something in the next month and a half?
It was an idea that I was considering before, when I was looking at scheduling the August meeting to try to coordinate with the two cities for the city council meeting, because at least people have heard of the city council and they might.
Well,
the council meeting, and so I could follow up with the city managers about that, and I would invite Eden as part of that mix so they can talk about their district, and then maybe the Castro Valley MAC. I don't know if there's another venue for the other unincorporated areas that would need to be done, but I'm seeing three meetings that would be held jointly, possibly. And I would work with their calendars to figure out what dates might work, and we can
hold the meeting. So you can do them all, perhaps, and you know, making sure that we got coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so it would be noticed as a LAFCO meeting, a regular meeting, noticed LAFCO meeting. Or maybe it would be a special meeting, I guess. It would be a special meeting with LAFCO.
But then in conjunction with the
with the other jurisdictions.
Okay, and we've already got an offer to help pay for this, so perhaps we can engage some of the other agencies to help out as well.
So I can follow up with that and send a letter to each of the jurisdictions.
So, just, I just want to add clarity. So is it going to be a LAFCO meeting, a special LAFCO meeting on the Brown Act?
I mean,
LAFCO's holding the meeting, so you would definitely need to have a forum of LAFCO.
I believe so. Okay. And it would be a joint meeting.
I'm trying to understand how it's getting noticed through LAFCO. It's a LAFCO special meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you'll get to work, try to make some days and work with the other agencies to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think I got direction.
Well, you know, let me add that that counts like 80% of people probably don't know what he does. I don't think 80% of people in my family know what I do.
I guarantee you 80% of people don't know what LAFCO does.
My other joke was I was going to offer to have an open house in LAFCO, but I realized that my upstairs bathroom is busy.
Okay, so we're done making the sausage. Let's go on to 9, Eden Township. Ten, the Grand Jury.
Item number 10 is related to the grand jury report that came out on June 21st. And staff informed the commission that LAFCO was the subject of one of the sections of that report. The section pertaining to LAFCO contained one finding and three recommendations, which were listed in the staff report. And so staff provided a draft response for each of those items. And as a reminder, the law requires that LAFCO respond to the finding by stating whether the commission agrees or disagrees, fully or partially, as well as the reasons for any disagreement. LAFCO's response to their recommendations must state whether the recommendation has been implemented, will be implemented in the future with a timeline, will not be implemented because it's not warranted or is not reasonable, with a statement of the reasons why. Or additionally, LAFCO could respond that further analysis is needed with a time frame of no more than 6 months and an explanation of what that analysis would entail. In summary, staff recommends that the commission disagree with the findings because LAFCO's oversight of local agencies, including the Eden Township Healthcare District, rests primarily with the adoption of a sphere of influence and conducting a municipal service review. And LAFCO did conduct a municipal service review in 2013 and updated the district sphere, first provisionally, and then subsequently the commission removed the provisional status of the sphere after the district had reported back to LAFCO for the conditions that LAFCO imposed. And those report backs included providing updates on the status of the district's implementation of its strategic plan. Furthermore, LAFCOs are not empowered to provide administrative oversight of the local agencies under LAFCO jurisdiction, nor are LAFCOs structured or funded to take on those efforts. Regarding the grand jury's recommendations, staff recommends that the commission consider responding to recommendation 1615 that it has been implemented by way of the MSR that was conducted in 2013. That recommendation 1617 will not be implemented,
because it is not warranted or reasonable. That recommendation suggests that LAFCO provide greater scrutiny and oversight of the district.
It's not what we do.
And that finally, recommendation 1618 is being implemented because LAFCO is currently conducting a special study of the district. Staff also wants to point out again that that last recommendation is in conflict with the grand jury's recommendation to the district, and that was recommendation 1615 for the district to go to its constituents, to its voters, and ask them to weigh in on what should happen with the district. And so staff just requests at this time that the commission discuss the proposed responses and provide any desired changes and direct staff to send a response to the grand jury by the 121st deadline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just have a little comment to make staff, Lizzie. Mm-hmm. So and just maybe see the comprehensive responses. Maybe it's just the way I process information, but for example, when it says the Alameda County LAFCO Commission must provide greater scrutiny, we give a long response, and at the end it basically says that's not what we do. For me, I'd rather say we disagree or won't be implemented, and then the very first thing we should say is that's not what we do.
Okay.
Then get into all the reasons why, or on the very first one, we disagree. And tell them that's what we just why we disagree, and then get into the paragraphs about why.
Okay.
Because I think it just directly answers the point. We're not going to do this because that's not what we do. We disagree with you because that's not what we do, or whatever, and then get it to the explanation. Because otherwise, they're reading all of it, and at the end, they get to the answer of, oh, that's just not what we do.
Okay.
That's all.
That's good. Just again, it's what we talked about all day today. So the grand jury doesn't understand what LAFCO does. And they think that we're in supervisors of the agency. That's not what we do.
And we have no power to do that.
Right, but we have no authority to provide oversight. So again, the grand jury doesn't know what we do. So, but no, I think good point. So we have a first, we have a motion, and a second. Any discussion on the motion?
Could you tell me who made the motion?
I believe that was Commissioner Hagerty.
Oh, okay.
Seconded by Commissioner Wieskamp. And with the modifications that were recommended by Commissioner Halpern.
Okay.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Passed unanimously. Moving on to the meeting schedule.
This is the annual item on your agenda to set the meeting schedule for the next calendar year, which will be 2017. And as you know, the commission meets on the second Thursday of the odd month of the year. So those dates you were presented. Staff made an effort to try to find potential meeting conflicts, and one was identified with the California League of Cities, or the League of California Cities annual conference, which occurs on September 13th through 15th in 2017, and the LAFCO meeting, I believe, would be on the 14th. So I just wanted to know from the commission if you'd rather reschedule that meeting or go ahead and keep it where it is.
It only affects the mayor, surely.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I'll be going.
You'll be going? Okay, so quickly, the administration want to move that for Chaps the third Thursday.
We have no big guidance on it.
Okay, let's go for the third. We'll move that to the 21st.
Okay.
Okay, so do we need a motion on this? Ms. Vasquez, do we need a motion?
Yes, you did.
He's approved. Okay,
yes.
So moved.
It's a resolution, yes.
Moved by Commissioner Spangoria, seconded by Commissioner Thorne. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay. Information, members initiated. Any members initiated? Okay. On to information items. Those are in the report. We've got the annual conference coming up in Santa Barbara.
About the conference.
Yeah, Sandy was asking whether we could just repeat exactly what's going, because we need to have some documentation reflected in the minutes for when we process
any reimbursement claims. So who is our understanding of who's going standing?
Okay. Commissioner Splendorio, Commissioner Johnson, Commissioner Michon is now signed up, Commissioner Wieskamp, Commissioner Von Hiller-Leopold. It is October, what are the dates?
It's October 26th through 28th. It's in Santa Barbara at the Beth Parker Hotel.
So we're meeting after the Sunday.
So, Commissioner Haggerty or Miley, are you interested to go to that?
Maybe that a relative
has. Yeah, okay.
The only item in the information item that is verbal is for the Board of Directors update, which there was one meeting held in Irvine, I think?
San Diego.
I did not attend that one, so...
Well, a lot of it, I mean, to be honest with you, you covered the legislative... I mean, a lot of it was legislative.
Yeah. Okay.
So, for our purposes, I mean, you can distribute the legislative update that Pam sent out last week, but
I thought it was
course, there was a lot of discussion, but the end result of what happened is not much.
And then there's the annual conference with Commissioner Splendorio, just the chairperson. Yay.
So they nailed down the biggest issue that was left was nailing down the Thursday luncheon keynote speaker, and the keynote speaker is Jean-Michel Cousteau.
Whoa, really?
Really?
Grandson?
No, son.
Son? Father.
Maybe I'll go.
And I also mentioned that Mr. Santorio is moderating a session on the Wednesday that conference starts, it's a general session that's titled Back to Our Roots, and it has to do with, I'm longer titled than that, but it has to do with balancing LAFCO's efforts to preserve ag and open space and accommodate needed development. And that's kind of how LAFCO's came about, and there'll be some discussion about the latest trends and urban planning, urban and city planning, and ag preservation. And then one last bit, we'll talk about how they've gone about that. So there'll be some interesting sessions.
Okay, with that, the next regular meeting is November 10th, 2 o'clock, right here. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.